The Baya STEM Global Competitiveness Conference presents Lessons in Leadership, Business Branding and Marketing to Federal Government, America's Fortune, a professional development seminar. Featuring retired director of the Army Small Business Programs Office, Tommy Marks, president and CEO of Encore Solutions, Nicole Priester, founder of the Windsor Group, Deidre Windsor, director of the Defense Logistics Agency, Lieutenant General Darrell Williams. Throughout this seminar, listeners will learn perspectives on doing business with the government from the small business and federal contracting officer perspective. Without further delay, the Baya STEM Global Competitiveness Conference presents Lessons in Leadership, Business Branding and Marketing to Federal Government, America's Fortune. Featuring Tommy Marks, Nicole Priester, Deidre Windsor, and Lieutenant General Darrell Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for attending the small business panel. If everybody can just move up so we can have like an intimate conversation, there's no need for everybody to be completely spread out, considering this room is bigger than the rooms that I've been in the past, and since it's only about 20 of us, you all can just move up to the front and then we can have a more intimate conversation. My name is Nena Johnson. I am the 2019 Military Symposium Lead for the Baya HLL Military Government Track. Welcome to the Small Business Panel. The time is now 2:03 and we are in Virginia C. This afternoon, this panel will be moderated by Ms. Deidre Windsor, and she'll be introducing her panelists. I also would like to make sure that everyone has a badge and that it has been scanned on your way in. Please take advantage of the career professional development points that are all being offered by the Morgan State University table that's right near the Baya registration table. And lastly, please also fill out the surveys. Return on investment is important to us, and data analytics is also important to us. We want to know how well we're doing, and we want to know if we have any room for improvement, where that room for improvement should be and can be. So without further ado, thank you for attending again, and I turn it over to Ms. Windsor.
Thank you, Nena. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Welcome. You're in for a really big treat today. I'm very excited to be here. Very excited. We have a great panel here today. How many small business owners here today? Okay, good. How many people in here want to start a small business? Okay, good. Well, we're very excited to see all of you. We have a very top-heavy panel here today, and I think that you're all going to get some great things out of it. As Nena said, I'm Deidre Windsor. I am a small business owner. I'm retired Army, but I'm also a small business owner. I've owned my business for about 2 years. I did work for the government for about 6 years, and part of one of my collateral duties was as a warrant holder, or they, as they call them, contracting officers. I don't like to insult real contracting officers, people like Tommy Marks, who actually deep into procurement. So without further ado, today's panelists, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves, but I'm just going to give you the highlight. So we have the director of the Defense Logistics Agency, Lieutenant General Darrell Williams. That is a big deal, okay? That's a really, really big deal. And so we also have a small business owner, Nicole Priester, and we have Mr. Tommy Marks. He's a retired SES, formerly worked in the Army Small Business Office. And so I'm going to let the panelists introduce themselves and talk a little bit about what it is they bring to this panel with regard to small businesses. So we're going to go ahead and start. If we can start with you, sir.
Okay. Well, first of all, good afternoon to everybody. Delighted to be here. Thank you for the invitation. And I think what I will bring to the panel is perhaps a governmental perspective. Many of you will see a packet that I left on some of the front chairs. If you didn't get one of these, I would encourage you to do so, about how to do business specifically with my organization. So a little bit about DLA. Defense Logistics Agency is, we do about $38 billion a year in revenue. And right now we work with about 12,000 different suppliers. And We purchase everything for the Department of Defense and the military services from subsistence items, food, water, to industrial hardware, to medical supplies, to repair parts, largely for all of the major weapon systems that you see. We also purchase almost 100% of the fuel that Department of Defense uses. And so the bottom line is we purchase most of the common items that the military services use. And we also have relationships with about 40 other different federal government agencies. And so we work with Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. And so every time you see a hurricane or a natural disaster, we're normally the ones providing the supply support for those kinds of disasters. So we do a great deal of business for the Department of Defense, and the majority of our suppliers are small businesses. Last year, in fiscal year 18, we did about $14.8 billion in small business. And so that was about 37% of the agency's total spend. So we have a commitment to small business, and I'm excited to be here and answer your questions.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. Nicole?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nicole Priester, and I'm the president of a small business called Encore Solutions Incorporated. We're a woman-owned business located in Rockville, Maryland, and been in business since 2001. We provide professional support services in the areas of engineering, technology integration, and administrative support services. I'm here as a small business industry partner, been around the Bay Area community for a while, and I'm also the president of the Retired Military Officers Business Association, which is a networking organization composed of small, medium, and large businesses.
Thank you so much.
Tommy? Good afternoon. Tommy Marks. I am the former director of the Army Small Business Programs, which amassed $20 billion worth of awards to small business annually over the last 3 years that I was at the seat. I retired about 4.5 months ago from that. That was only to start a fourth career, as you would say. And so my background is acquisition, contracting, and logistics. And in fact, General Williams and I first met several years ago in a tiny place called Kuwait, where he was our chief of operations as we supported the war effort. So, sir, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Tommy.
Awesome. Thank you. And so I'm sure you all agree we have a great panel here. And so the purpose, when we talked about having this panel, what we really wanted to talk about are how do you build those relationships with the federal government? How do you get started as a small business and get your name out there and get successful? And the purpose for bringing, we got three different aspects. Mr. Marks worked in an office where he dealt with nothing but small businesses, helping small businesses figure out how to do business with the Army. And then Ms. Priester, what she brings is, she's a small business owner. She can kind of talk to you about the successes, the challenges, how to get through the storm, which is what we're going through now. And we're very fortunate to have General Williams, because obviously he is the head of a major agency. And as you heard him say, they purchase almost everything, okay? And so DLA is an organization that all small businesses should be looking to do business with. So without further ado, could each one of you talk a little bit about your experience dealing with small businesses and kind of some of the things you've encountered with regard to their ability to do business with the government? You have a lot of businesses, they want to do businesses, but what are some of the things that you've seen done right? And then what are you see some of the things that you think that we could emphasize more to help those small businesses get in the door? And we can start with you, sir.
Okay. First, it's a great question. It's a fantastic question, because although certainly at DLA we do business with a lot of small businesses, I don't think a day goes by or I don't come to an engagement of this kind where there are other people who want to do business with DLA. And so What I provided in the handout are things that I think are very, very, very helpful. And so nothing's more frustrating for small businesses is they come to conferences like this, we have a great conversation, and they're left wondering, how do you follow up? And so what I wanted to leave with you today was some nuts and bolts of how to follow up with DLA. And some of this, I'm sure, would also be very helpful in your endeavor to do business with the federal government in general. And so in that packet, what you'll see are a couple of documents. One of them is called specifically Steps to Business with DLA. And so the first thing I would tell you to directly answer your question, what are some good things we've seen? What we find is that small businesses or any business that have done their homework about exactly how they want to interact with DLA are the ones that are most successful, meaning that you've gone to our website, that you've taken a hard look at what DLA offers, that you can specifically identify how you can add value to what it is that we are trying to do, and that you have a very strong business plan for how you want to engage with DLA and the federal government. The other thing you should realize is it's not easy to often do business with the federal government, and the ones that often win are the ones that persist. And so don't take no for an answer. And you do have to be the one to follow up. The next thing I would say is understand the priorities of the organization that you want to do business with. And so right now, if you went to our website, you would see the DLA's priority is support to the warfighter. Well, what does that mean? That means that we're right now trying to improve the readiness of all of the military services, all of their weapon systems. That's our number one priority. And so you probably should be able to speak that language when you come to visit DLA. The next thing is organizations like DLA are very large. We have 6 separate buying units, profit and loss centers. We have one in Philadelphia that's called Troop Support. We have one in Columbus, Ohio. We have another one in Richmond, Virginia. Another one is in our headquarters, Energy, and another one in Battle Creek, Michigan. So go on our website and really do some research and determine which one of those 6 really suit your needs. The next thing is points of contact. In this packet, I've given you the telephone numbers, the email addresses, the websites that you need to go to do that research. And so in a nutshell, it's do your research, figure out which agencies you want to engage with, how do you fit into their business plan, and then follow up with the right points of contact.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so I have a reason I'm going to go in this order. So, Tommy, can you talk to, you've been, so General Williams, he's a 3-star general, so he's probably a little less at the tactical level where he's dealing directly with the businesses. But Mr. Marks, actually, in his capacity with the Army, probably dealt directly with the businesses. Talk to us a little bit about, based on what General Williams said, how does that work out? I mean, you've had to deal with a lot of small businesses. I know some of them come in prepared and some of them come in not so prepared.
Right.
What are your insights there?
So I will tell you that, and we did not practice this together, but obviously General Williams' folks prepared him very well because he's a customer. And when you would come to my office, I try to talk to the small business from a customer's perspective because I was a policy office. And all the things he said, really what you will hear me say is echo what he said. You must do your homework as a small business. And in that first step, you must decide what it is you're going to be, right, when you grow up, which means what are you going to sell? Because you could come to me, and the ones that were not successful would come in my office and says, well, I got 10 next codes that I can provide the Army with this. Well, guess what? First, do you know what the mission is of who you want to go after? That's back to the customer's mission. You must understand what the customer's mission is, because we're all about the warfighter in the end. If you're in defense contracting, it's about the warfighter at the end of the spear. And you must understand, but you could take that analogy even in the commercial side of the house. Right. It's the customer in the end that we must satisfy. So our customer is the warfighter. And if you understand the mission and what the product you bring or service, that's how you'll be successful. Those companies that were successful, they had done their homework. They knew the mission of that program manager who they wanted to speak to down to the customer level. And those that didn't were not successful. It's just that simple. And then when you get an opportunity to talk to someone, you've got to have the right pitch when you go in. And I think Dr. Priester will share that with you when she comes to her. Because a 30-page presentation ain't going to work. You got to be able to lay that down. If you get a chance to meet one of them in the hallway, that elevator speech about your capabilities and why you're much better than Tommy Marks is what's going to get you in the door. And then if there's detail they need, they're going to ask you for that, and you come back to that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Marks. Dr. Priester?
Well,
you're the small business.
Yes.
Okay. And so tell us how that worked out.
Right.
when you got there, how does that really work out?
So I would agree that you do have two very distinct perspectives. And I would also say that in the approach of the question that you ask, how do you get started? It really can begin with the technical competency or capability of the business owner, or you know what it is that you decide that you want to do business in, or the field that you'd like to be in. So beginning with technical competency, the next thing you need to do is to define your mission. You know, what problem do you want to solve? Where is your point of impact going to be? It's not enough to say that I want to have a company doing cybersecurity. I want to have a company doing cybersecurity because I choose to impact the warfighter in this way, or I'm aware of this problem and I believe that we can make a difference, or our point of impact can be in field X, Y, and Z. So you have to think it out a little bit further than the skill set or the lane that you're working in. In terms of something else that you need to have in your toolkit of being a small business owner is that you need to align yourself with communities of practice, where a lot of companies, I wouldn't say fail, but lose traction, is that they go it alone. And in today's times, you need collaboration. You need to work with teams, whereas you could be focused on one very specific component. You could be the very thing, or your company could have the very capability that the company down the street needs in order to satisfy something with the customer.
Absolutely.
Right? So you need to engage with communities of practice and to find out who your competitors are out there and how you can collaborate, because being a competitor is not a bad thing. I think that's it.
But what I want to know, and thank you for that, I want to know, like, when you've gone into these contracting officers,
yes,
you're actually out there, boots on the ground, small business owner, what does that look like? Can you tell the audience a little bit about sometimes that where it worked out great and sometimes where it didn't work out so great? Because sometimes we put a lot of effort into one organization and, you know, it never bears fruit. And so can you talk a little bit about that?
So it's timing. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's timing. You can have all the technical know-how. You can have all the right people. But if that agency is not procuring what you're offering, then it's a timing issue and it becomes unfortunate for you. So the other thing that the small business owner has to do is to find out who wants what you have. I can go sit down and talk with Tommy and say, this is what I have, and have a great conversation, or talk with the general and say, I'm aware that you have bought these things, but I may not know that there's a freeze on that and he's not buying it anymore. Mm-hmm. Or that those needs are now being sourced through another government agency. Mm-hmm. Right? So it really comes down to knowing what's really going on with inside of the agency, and how you can help find that out is through relationships.
Okay.
Because no one is going to know all that on their own.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about contracting officers and dealing with contracting officers. Can you tell us a little bit about, in each panelist, tell us, give us some idea of what some strategies to get to the contracting officer, or really to some of the program managers, because that's another big thing. I think a lot of people think, and I'm pretty sure General Williams can attest to this, and so can Mr. Marks, can attest to the fact that people will come to them all the way, like, I need to know the general. And sometimes they don't know the exact person that they need to know, because obviously, honestly, you can put them in a precarious position, you know, when you're cousin or mom and you're going and can you get me a contract, you know. So talk a little bit about that. What's the best strategy to get to the contracting officers and the program managers?
So Tommy's probably the world's expert on this part.
So I would tell you that the what I talk to people, as a small business, you want to get to know the small business specialists before you even know the contracting officers. I once upon a time was a contracting officer myself, but the reality is we have a setup in the Department of Defense, and actually all the federal agencies, where we have small business specialists. Their job is to advocate for small businesses, and they are employed by the government. So in the Army, we had 250 of those folks spread out throughout the United States Army. And so the reason we were able to get $20 billion a year in small business, one, we had commanders that supported that, but we had small business professionals that worked with contracting officers in order to help small businesses get known. Because as Dr. Priester said, the bottom line is relationships really is number one on the list, even with the contracting officers, because in their file, their little data banks, if something comes up and you happen to be one of those companies that they have talked with, they have your capabilities, they'll reach out. Now, does every contracting officer do that? Truth and lending, no. But the best ones do. But the small business specialists, and you can find those folks on every, in the Department of Defense, we all got our websites. And actually across the federal government, you go to those websites and they have a section for small business, and we electronically list all those specialists there. But get to know the small business folks, because they can help you maneuver through some stuff that that becomes hard. At my level, what I would always tell people, I have no mission except to advocate, and I have no money for sure, okay? Because I can't get you a contract when you come into the small business office. And that's to include what the small business specialists you're going to talk with, who are down at the tactical level. They don't have the mission or the money, but they have the know-how to put you in contact with those program managers, those requiring activities, and those contracting officers.
Yeah. So I wanted to piggyback on that a little bit as well. The whole relationship piece is huge. And so how do you develop a relationship with an organization that you don't know anything about? And so the first thing I would tell you, I go back to something I talked about earlier, and that was do your research. And then most of the time, I would tell you that if you're diligent enough in looking online and making a few phone calls, you can really find someone in the organization that is specifically focused on what you want to do. So the mistake I see a lot of people make is that they get turned off by the first no, or by the first person that they run into who doesn't understand exactly what it is that you want to do. And so the research part is critical. And then once you hone in on the person that you need to talk to, you need to understand a little bit about that person's background. They're human too. And believe it or not, they really are rooting for you. But you have to find a way to make yourself stand out. You have to be the one to make them understand that although you're a small business, I'm capable of delivering what it is that you require. Okay, contracting officers, just like everybody else, are also looking for someone who's going to make their job easy. You know, and if you can make their job easy by presenting the right documentation, having done the right research, able to answer all of their questions right up front, then you're probably someone we can do business with. So for DLA, I also put in your packet something that lays out where DLA spends a lot of its money. This isn't everything, but it talks very specifically about those areas where we spend millions and billions of dollars. And this is a great way to take a look at whether or not where we're spending our money matches what your core competence is. This would be a great place to start. The second thing I would mention is, and this is not just for DLA, but it's the PTAC, so the Procurement Technical Assistance Program. They're in all 50 states, and I've put one of those in your handout as well. It's not just about doing business with DLA, it's about doing business with the entire federal government, and it's a network of professionals that are dedicated to assisting businesses do business with the federal government. I would strongly recommend that you get to know the PTAC office in your local area, pay them a visit, and they can help guide you through the process as well.
Thank you, sir.
And if I could, in the PTACs, most of the training and advice there is free, with very minimum cost, if any.
Thank you both. I would say that if you're trying to do what is very hard, Deidre, to meet the contracting officers or program managers, mm-hmm. You need to find out where they, not socialize, but where they get their technical enrichment. Mm-hmm. So there's an organization called the National Contract Managers Association. I would also look at other affinity groups that there might be where you could get to know them. I would also look within organizations like AFSCEA and NDIA when they have their monthly meetings. They typically invite people out. There's mm-hmm. typically program managers and contracting officers who come out and support those events, and you'll have an opportunity to meet with them on a social level. You'll hear a technical presentation and have an opportunity to establish a relationship with them. In terms of looking online and on the internet, if you have procurement software like GovWin, you're able to do some forecasting for a year or 18 months out. A lot of times the program manager or contracting officer's name will be listed in there. So before the opportunity is released, you can establish a relationship with that individual and get to know them and to see if you can present your capabilities ahead of time. But that's really difficult. It's easier said than done. When I first came into this industry, you could walk right into a government building and go into the SABU's office and sit down and have a conversation. You can absolutely not walk into a federal building like that anymore. So you're going to have to do a lot of homework on your own. In terms of getting past the first no, I tell people that this business is not easy. It's not for everyone. If you can't eat rocks for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and make yourself believe that it tastes good, then you're laughing, but it's not for you. It's not for you. For me, it still tastes good. And I just, you know.
You're listening to Lessons in Leadership, Business Branding and Marketing to Federal Government, America's Fortune, a professional development seminar. Featuring Tommy Marks, Nicole Priester, Deidre Windsor, and Lieutenant General Darrell Williams. Brought to you by the BEA STEM Global Competitiveness Conference, where we stand at the intersection of America's future. Be sure to check out our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have to present a prototype? So I know we're talking about, but do I have to prove that it works before you invest in my business? How do you know that what I'm selling to you is going to be beneficial to your company or organization and that it works?
So I would say it depends on if you're providing a service, then you would have past performance of where you've already demonstrated your capability. To say I've been at the Department of Treasury for X number of years, we've done records management services, we've done database development, the track record is already out there. But if you are in something that's a little bit more technical or scientific, then there are different avenues to pursue pilot studies through the SBIR program or different approaches to get your prototype some visibility.
Thank you. I want to add one thing to that. Sometimes too, just to meet those people you want to meet, you just got to go and be where they are.
That's exactly right.
I will
right.
tell you that I met Mr. Marks. I rushed over here probably 2 years ago. He was on this panel, and I rushed over here. Even though I had met him before, but I didn't meet him in the small business capacity. Mm-hmm. It was in an Army capacity, and I knew he was going to be here, and so I made sure I was there. And, you know, that was a whole day just to meet one person for 5 minutes. And sometimes that's what you have to do. And also another thing I would add about, you know, doing business with the government, we don't say it often because we think it goes without saying, but you really have to write proposals. I think a lot of people, we talk a lot about building relationships, and that is critical because that's how you get those big contracts. You know, you build those relationships, you build that trust. But a lot of small businesses, they seem to forget that part sometimes. Sometimes you just got to go out there because it's a misnomer. People tell you, oh, on FedBizOps, there's no work out there. Now the work is taken. That's not true. You really got to go out there, find some of that easy stuff, and apply so you can get those prime contracts. So for the panel, does someone have a question? Oh, yes, sir. So you know what? That's a good question. That was the next question I was going to ask the panel. Let's talk about that, but also subcontracting and other ways to get at doing business with the government your first time.
So to your question, you're asking how do you build the 2 year past performance? How do you start? So, do you have any professional experience?
Yeah, I'm currently in the industry about 10 years.
Okay. So you can always start with your own resume. And what I did was when I started my company, I shared with the owners that this is what I had planned to do. And they let me transition out of my role by contracting my services back for 6 months. So it allowed me to say that my first job was a consulting assignment with this company that I used to work for. On my professional resume, no one knew that I used to work for this company, but it just was program management services or some type of consultancy work. Is there any way that you can support other people in industry, some type of way, even if it's not getting paid for it, so that you can build up that experience on paper? Relationships. Who will let you say that, yes, I worked with him, he did this for me, he helped us work through this scenario, he delivered A, B, or C, so that you can have a past performance reference and you can start to build some a track record for your company. That's what I would think of.
So what I would say is just realizing that you're always competing against a very talented pool of other suppliers or service providers. And so at the end of the day, for the government, you're always looking for best value. Best value is not always defined by lowest price, but it is defined by the organization that has the most experience, that does have the financial wherewithal to that would make us comfortable that you can meet your commitments, because at the end of the day, this is about support in many cases to major weapon systems. And so people don't tend to take chances in that regard. Where I have seen some small businesses be successful with less experience is in areas where they provide a niche capability that we need that no one else is offering. So this issue of innovation is very important. So where do some of those areas exist right now? So right now, artificial intelligence, for example, is booming. And there are developments in artificial intelligence, additive manufacturing, robotic process automation. All of those things are on the cutting edge right now. A lot of large businesses are in that game. But there are a lot of small businesses that are pairing with large businesses that have cutting edge ideas that even the large businesses don't have. And so to Dr. Priester's point, who can you align yourself with until you can get the experience that you require? Or can you provide a niche capability that no one else does?
So one of the things to this point we've talked about is about you doing business directly with the government. And that's, we call that the prime contracts. But there's a plethora of money, also billions, out there in subcontracting opportunities. And especially when you want to help establish your past performance. Mm-hmm. Teaming with other companies, whether that's another small company, right, or an other than small company, as a subcontractor, bringing your expertise. Because I can tell you, and General Williams mentioned this earlier, I mean, even with the prime contractors, most people, when we talk in the Department of Defense, we got the big six. And, you know, since I left the Army, I've forgotten them all, but I won't call them by names. But they don't do all that work themselves.
Correct.
It's not all insourced. I mean, those days are really gone, and I don't ever see them returning. So they actually build teams of people, of companies, in order to give us our weapon systems. And you will find that sometimes the most significant piece on a weapon system is not designed or built by the big guy. Mm-hmm. It's some small company that's been very innovative that puts that last wicket in there. So subcontracting is very important. In fact, it's billions of dollars, as I said. And before I left my job, I had to testify before Congress about just about that subcontracting and our lack of enforcement of subcontracting with our big primes. And so that's another way, and I'd always tell companies, if you really want to get started, as you're getting started, subcontracting either with a similar company or with another than small, because that's, without subcontracting, we still couldn't get our readiness missions done. Yeah.
Thank you. So, can you talk about some of the highs and lows of doing business with the government? Mm-hmm. And I'd like to start out with you, Dr. Priester, because as a small business owner, and right now, we're in that time, you know, with the government shutdowns and things like that. A lot of people are very impacted by that. And so I would love to hear your perspective as a small business, but also both of the other panelists' experience just dealing with the businesses.
Sure. So I'll start with the positive. You have an opportunity.
Thank you, Dr.
I will start with the positive. Because we've done a lot of work in DOD, you have an opportunity to serve your country through your business. You can support the warfighter. Specifically, I remember a contract that we had doing some mechanical engineering support at the Letterkenny Army Depot in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. And we were taking requests from the warfighter in the field saying, you know, my Humvee is great, but I wish I had an extra hook somewhere over here to do da-da-da-da-da. And it would come in and it would go upstairs to one of our drafters, mechanical engineers, and once everything was approved, it would go right back downstairs to the shop and make its way out. I mean, that is one of the coolest things that I feel like I've ever done, because I knew that it made a difference for someone who was deployed. So you can serve your country, you can support the warfighter, and for me, as a small business owner, I have an opportunity to employ people who are traditionally overlooked for mission-sensitive requirements. In terms of the lows, you know, we're coming off of a terrible shutdown. And on the previous one, I think it would have been in 2016, one of my colleagues, when she was in the transition period of her contract being up for renewal, and when the government reopened, they terminated her contract without cause. So she was on the hook for those 20-something people that she still had to pay out vacation and whatever benefits that they had accrued, and it was just over. It can be over at a moment's notice. So that's like one of the worst things, whether it's a shutdown or just because, right? Am I telling the truth, Tom?
You're telling the truth.
Telling the painful truth. In terms of subcontracting, it can be wonderful. It really depends on your relationship with your prime. I had a long-term relationship with a prime for 15 years, and they recently poached all my people. What can I do about it? Absolutely nothing, because there's no enforcement. They got some great folks who've been a part of this program for years, and now they decided that it was time for them to wear a different shirt, and I have no recourse. So those are the types of things that, you know, stink. But I'm still in it.
Still eating those rocks.
I'm still eating those rocks. That's exactly right.
Yeah, so the best part of my job has been the help that we can provide to small businesses. And I talked to, my door was always open, and I had held many meetings. From a government perspective, the story she just told, which is real live, the challenge with federal contracting, okay, is that you must have a mission requirement in order for a contract to stay in force. And if there's no mission requirement, then we cannot obligate and spend government taxpayer dollars on that. And unfortunately, sometimes those requirements go away because, especially this time, as we're right-sizing our forces and our mission requirements, there'll be some casualties, if you will, from that. But the things that I had to do as an advocate was when folks didn't get paid, you know, those letters would come to my office. And my job was to put the right hat on and go find out why they didn't get paid. Because, I mean, we have a statutory requirement on payments, but that's not always, federal government is slow to pay. And folks will tell you that when you get started, that's one of the things, you got to have some backup and capital in order so that you can meet your payrolls, because those checks don't normally, you get happy, you sign the contract with me today and you're happy, but money doesn't start flowing that same, and she can tell you, it doesn't start flowing that same way. So there's some patience there. The low parts are when you got to get in and solve the problems. And not that I don't want to solve the problems, it's the fact that it came up to begin with, and sometimes it could have been avoided, mm-hmm. just that folks would talk. And we get some hard-headed contracting officers sometimes. But again, my job was to go down and get those folks to think right. And what I can report is that we straighten all those types of things out. But unfortunately, they do take place.
And I would like to add to your comment, Tommy, in terms of payment. And this is where being knowledgeable and having relationships, or really just being knowledgeable, doing your homework, can come in, is that there's a Prompt Payment Act that was came into effect maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago. If that provision is in your contract, then it says the small business is supposed to be paid within 2 weeks or 30 days mm-hmm. of an approved invoice. So it's not like when I first came into the industry where it was not unusual to be 90 days out for getting payment. So there are ways to avoid that.
That's painful, by the way.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, and Dr. Priest, correct me if I'm wrong. So when you're dealing with the federal government, right, the first and foremost, the federal acquisition regulations are what apply, regardless of agency. Then what happens to you, right? That's the base document. When you're talking about the Department of Defense, then there's the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulations that are supplement to that.
Right.
And then if you're going to deal with the Army, there's the Army supplement to the supplement to the supplement, right? Now, what I would tell you sounds complicated, and it can get to be, but the base document, everybody's following that. But there are some tweaks to it that you got to know. So if you're dealing with, it goes back to, you got to know the agency that you're dealing with. Because I can tell you, other federal agencies don't necessarily have, as I learned after I retired, right? As one person told me, you know, you guys in the Department of Defense, y'all just make stuff so, so difficult. Mm-hmm. Well, those are the rules we have to play by, right? But you have to understand those when you're going in. But I will submit to you, even on the state level, the states have their regulations. And if we don't understand those when we go in, and by the way, I'm starting my own small business, so I'll be getting some of that same taste that I was on the opposite side of the table here shortly, right? But you got to understand those rules in order to, you know, to play in the game. Does that answer?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, I would say that when you're in the proposal stage, there's the certifications and representations. And so you're saying that I agree to these clauses that are already included, which are part of all of those different alphabets, FAR, DFAR, all the different regulations that are in there. You really don't have much say-so. Unfortunately, you're saying that I understand that this is what you're offering and these are the terms and conditions that come with it, and we were willing to accept that.
Go see your PTAC.
General Williams, can I get you to answer that one?
Although, again, the real subject matter expert on the policy side of things is probably Tommy Marks. But, Tommy, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't, every single year we form committees, we form groups that look at how to streamline.
Yes, sir.
The federal defense acquisition process. I know that within the Department of Defense right now, there is an effort underway to comb that huge document down to something that is much more manageable. With that said, that does not obviate the oversight within each one of the services and independent agencies to still do things a little bit differently. It is very, very frustrating for the federal government. It's frustrating for the contracting officers, quite frankly. The contracting officers would love to be a little bit more agile. I would tell you that in the Defense Logistics Agency, I would love to be able to award contracts a lot more quickly. And so when I've got a major weapon system that is non-mission capable for part that DLA is supposed to be providing, and I have a qualified business, I know where to go, but to go through the process may take me a lot longer than I would like it to. But the short answer to your question is, acknowledge that it is extraordinarily complex. I know a lot of people are working on it. I don't see any major changes coming anytime soon.
I'd add to that, have you heard of the 809 panel? 809 panel?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the name of it. Yeah. So about 3 years ago, Congress mandated and commissioned a panel, came to be known as the 809 panel. In fact, they finished their review of acquisition reform last summer and gave their interim report to Congress. And I understand right after I left, there's another report that came out, the final, the final, they say, report. The bottom line is that all the laws and regulations, the regulations that we go by, stem from the congressional laws on acquisition. And so that's all being reformed as we speak. But we know, go back to process, it's not going to change overnight. But I will tell you, there's been some major streamlining, and we will see that down the road. But it's got to report, it all tracks back to Congress and the laws that on the books to date. For example, when we go to war, and I come from a contingency environment, because I served 24 years in the Army, and we use the same regulations to build a plane to try to do what we have to do in the box. And I can tell you, having been a contracting officer in two wars, right, in the box, we don't have time for, all those steps by steps. So what I learned to do personally was to stretch that thing, right, without going to jail. Because ultimately, in the end, the contracting officer, the only person eligible to authorize to obligate the government, is a warranted contracting officer. And most of those folks are not general officers or senior SESs. They are GS-12s, 13s, 14s, and 15s. And, oh, by the way, they sign up the wrong thing, they go to jail if we want to pursue them, right? So, but the bottom line is, there's major acquisition reform going on And a lot of it that will affect small business. I was on a phone call yesterday with a small business guy that, of course, when you leave certain jobs, you don't see everything, right? So to date, that 809 panel has recommended that small business set-asides, which currently are mandated by law, mm-hmm. for socioeconomic categories, for service-disabled veterans, woman-owned businesses, to eliminate those set-asides. The reason they say, and General Williams, I was just talking before we started, they believe that the panel believes that it impacts readiness because we're giving so much stuff to small business. Well, the reality is, I'm here to tell you, our readiness, I believe, would be much worse if we didn't have the team of small businesses, both prime and subcontractors, that we deal with today in the Department of Defense. Don't see how we could get there. But there are folks that believe small businesses are a stumbling block to that.
I have a follow-up question to this gentleman's question. And for the panel, and I'll ask you this, General Williams, do you think the protest activity impacts, like, the reason for so many rules? Because obviously, you know, that's just something that happens quite a bit. Like, how much do you think that impacts how we got here with all of the policies and the levels of bureaucracy you have to go through to get a contract?
Well, you know, I really can't associate it to the protests. I just think it's years and years and years of trying to refine the process that has just become over cumbersome. Mm-hmm. And so I think everyone's trying to do the right thing, but every time you add a new rule, you add additional steps to the process. But for small businesses in particular, who do not have the resources that a lot of the larger businesses have, it becomes, one, very frustrating, and two, very, very difficult to do business because of the resources that are involved. And so one of those things that's coming down the pike that Tommy sort of talked about, that's the regulatory part. Well, the other big part that will impact DLA and a lot of businesses that do business with us is this whole issue on cybersecurity. And so you can expect to see, I think, in the not too distant future, a move by the federal government and Department of Defense and others to make sure that all of the businesses we do business with are cyber compliant. And so just like you hear it in the private sector, with people's business systems being infiltrated by foreign adversaries, the government has that same challenge. And so for businesses that want to do business with the federal government in the future, if you're a major supplier to DLA, don't be surprised if you have to meet certain cybersecurity requirements to continue to do that. Well, for a small business, that means more money in many cases that perhaps you don't have. I know there are a number of initiatives on the way, however, to make that a minimal cost or for the federal government to absorb that cost. But those are the kinds of things that find themselves into regulation and, in fact, make it more difficult to do business. But
that's really an interesting perspective. So when I started my company, I wanted to make sure that my infrastructure was in place. You know, I had the right accounting system, HR support, all of those things. And to do it all over again, I would still take that same approach, so that when the contractor opportunity comes, you don't have to go out and build all these other things. Like, you don't have to say, where am I going to get benefits? Where am I going to do whatever? How am I going to take care of my payroll? As a new company, if you can also say that we're cyber compliant, because all of those clauses from a prime is going to flow down to a sub, that is an excellent discriminator. The technical competency and other know-how, the prime can help you build it. Right? The prime can help
Absolutely.
You build it.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to get what you need in order to move forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We're going to take one final question, then I'm going to get final thoughts from the panel. Ms. White?
Back to on the potential. My name is Beverly White, and I have a small business in management consulting. We do cybersecurity, so I understand the comments that were just made. We are not working with the government. That's what I've been eating, sleeping, and drinking for the past few months. In the potential to get rid of the set-asides, are there statistics that support the fact that it's higher risk to do business? You know, like, have there been failures, or are there examples of businesses that were out of compliance? I mean, what's driving them to decide the fact that people like to do business with the larger companies because they feel safer?
Well said. I have not seen any statistics. In fact, I got excerpts of the report yesterday, and I read that there were no statistics in it that would say bring me to that conclusion. What I can tell you from my past experience, in 3 years in the Army seat, I had one complaint on a small business, and that small business was the only one that could do the work. Actually, it was two. We had two that could do the work in our ammo arena. And the reality really was a larger business wanted to be a part of that. And so the only way to do that is be a program manager and do a pass-through, because they really still couldn't do the work. And so one complaint in 3 years, and we averaged $19 billion a year in those 3 years to small businesses. So what I would tell you on 809 panel, I can't be fired by the federal government because I don't work for them anymore, right? But I might have to watch what I say, because the retirement I get, they might stop that. Yeah. And then my wife would be upset.
Yeah.
There was no small business advocate or expert on that panel. Now, I was interviewed along with other small business directors, but the panel did not consist of anyone that had, they consist of acquisition contracting folks, but no small business folks. So.
Thank you. Final thoughts. And we can start with you, Tommy, and just go down the line.
I would just tell you this. Don't be afraid to do business with the federal government. Okay? If you want to start your small business, you need to have a diversified portfolio. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks start on the commercial side. There's some different rules on that side of the house, but that can transfer over to doing business with the Department of Defense. The largest budget goes to the Department of Defense, $716 billion FY19. And oh, by the way, first time in years that it wasn't a continuing resolution. That's why the Department of Defense folks were not on shutdown. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Priester.
Sure. In terms of lessons on leadership for those who aspire to be small business owners who are small business owners, know that you are your brand. Your affiliations matter. What you do matters. Your community service, how you give back, other things that you do outside of the business community, all of that matters, and it's a reflection on your organization.
Thank you, Dr. Priester. Final word, sir.
Thank you for allowing me to be here today. Again, I left a packet of information that hopefully will help you do business with DLA number one, and more broadly, the federal government. But again, I emphasize being persistent, do your research, and develop those relationships. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you to all of our panelists. Join me in a round of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Lessons in Leadership, Business Branding and Marketing to Federal Government, America's Fortune, a professional development seminar. Featuring retired director of the Army Small Business Programs Office, Tommy Marks, president and CEO of Encore Solutions, Nicole Priester, founder of the Windsor Group, Deidre Windsor, and Director of the Defense Logistics Agency, Lieutenant General Darrell Williams. If you have enjoyed this presentation, be sure to attend the BEA STEM Global Competitiveness Conference. For more information on how you, your company, or organization can take part, visit www.bea.org. For college students, contact us at 410-244-7101.